Okay, I'd like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Victor. Victor, here you go.
Thank you. Victor, alcoholic?
Victor.
All right, hold on. I got something here. All right, I want to start off with thanking David for inviting me here. Thank him for all his service in the prison system in CMC, namely, where I met him. I want to thank the convention committee members for the opportunity to be here to speak. Thank you so much, and for everyone that volunteered, all the participants. And thank all of you for being here, showing up, the heart of AA. I appreciate you. I also want to thank my family for supporting me through a lot of hectic times where I'm sure many people would have long abandoned me. They were there, and so thank you. So I guess I'll start off with what it was like and what happened and, you know, what it's like today, right, what's going on. So I grew up in... Well, I was born in San Gabriel Valley, down there in a city called El Monte, kind of a, you know, rough neighborhood where, you know, there was a lot of, you know, dysfunction going on, you know, within my house, outside of my house, and, you know, alcohol wasn't anything, you know, foreign to me, right? I grew up in an alcoholic home. You know, my dad died in, he passed in 2017 of cirrhosis. His dad before him passed of cirrhosis, and for sure I was on that road to, you know, forfeiting my life to cirrhosis or, you know, some other tragic death. But I'm here in front of you today because of AA, so I'm grateful. But growing up, you know, I don't ever remember a time that there wasn't, you know, some form of alcohol, some drug, you know, some dysfunction, you know, not present in my life. And, you know, and for me, it was okay. I was okay with it. I was okay with, you know, the fact that, you know, my family drank breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know, with, you know, a bottle or, you know, a beer or whatever that looked like, smoked a joint, you know, did a line of coke or smoked some crack, right? It was just normal. And by the time I started, I, you know, some of my friends were, you know, a little awed by it. Me, it was just, you know, just normal. You know, it wasn't, I didn't have to think about it. It was kind of first nature. So I started, you know, maybe age 13 and, you know, just continued on, you know, for decades. But I'll start off with some of my childhood and, you know, how I used alcohol as a way to quiet the voices in my head, right, that said I wasn't ever going to be anything, that I wasn't good enough. The feeling that I had of just being uncomfortable in my own skin, you know, and how I found that place of just that drunken stupor, right, where everything was okay. I was a little funnier, you know, I was a little smarter, probably not so much, but a little smarter, I thought. You know, just, you know, able to be okay with who I really wasn't, right, but who I was presenting myself to be. We grew up pretty poor, right, and I remember, you know, probably from kindergarten to seventh grade, right, I moved, literally, we moved every year, right, we moved every year from one trailer park to the next, from one apartment to the next, from one abandoned car to the next. It was just a shit show, man. It was a shit show growing up. And, you know, my dad would drink, you know, every dollar we had. And I mean, I hated alcohol and I loved it, right? Throughout my entire life. I hated it and I loved it. I hated drugs and I loved them. I hated the dysfunction and I kind of like, you know, craved it. So we moved, you know, regularly, right? Because we couldn't pay the rent because, you know, my parents arguing and fighting and it was just chaos, right? And we would eventually move out to San Bernardino, California from the San Gabriel Valley, which is another, you know, if any of you have been to San Bernardino, it is like truly the butt crack of California. Just nothing's there. We got no sports team. We got no, you know, amusement parks. There's, you know, just tweakers, drunks, drug addicts, criminals, and a whole lot of cactuses, right? Like, it's just terrible, terrible place. Don't ever recommend anybody going there. Just drive around it. Go through Orange County. It's nicer. But that's really where, you know, things escalated for me. I got there in about the seventh grade, and man, I you know, just feeling like an outcast, feeling like a nobody. I met up with some guys, you know, some kids in you know, in the junior high school that I went to, and man, they got me. You know, they just got me. They knew who I was, and they knew, you know, how I grew up, and they kind of they had the same identity, right? Like, they felt like they weren't shit. I felt like I wasn't shit. It was cool. Their parents fought, my parents fought, right? Their dad drank, my dad drank, right? It was like a match made in heaven. And you know what? We were able to run the streets together, and we were able to do anything we wanted, right? Which led all of us to a bad place, right? But we got drunk together, and it was just like the coolest. You know, at that time for me, it was just the coolest, right? I didn't really think of myself as an alcoholic until, you know, just so many years later. I thought an alcoholic was a homeless man or woman with shit in their pants on the side of a liquor store with a brown paper bag and whatever the substance was in that bag, right? That was my idea of an alcoholic, but that wasn't true. But I had alcoholic tendencies from early on. And I think it's probably like genetic or hereditary, or I don't know, right? That's beyond my pay grade. But I loved it though. I loved the effect that it produced in my life, right? I was just okay, right? And I did that, right? And it kind of propelled me into some of the behaviors that would eventually end up leading me to prison. You know, I was able to drink and go commit crimes, and that was cool, right? Like it wasn't as bad being drunk, right? It wasn't as bad, you know, getting locked up, and, you know, just was okay, right? Like I would drink, and then I would get sober going into the juvenile centers. And I think probably maybe the first time I did, man, it was maybe 1993. It was probably 1993. I was 13 years old, and I was, it was just, you know, maybe a little bit of anxiety, but, you know, it was okay. I went in there, and most of my story, you know, involves me being incarcerated, because most of my life I was incarcerated. So I got, you know, I would go in and out of the juvenile system from the age of 13 to I think I got out in age 45. And I would get out and I would just go right back to the same behavior, man. I would, you know, get back to the neighborhood, you know, with the guys that I would hang out with, and we would party our asses off, right, what I called it. But really, it was just a drunk being a drunk, right? I would drink as much as I could, as fast as I could, until I couldn't remember shit. You know, I would just be in a haze, right? And you know, I over time, like it, you know, the way that it always does, right? My behavior with my criminality, right? My gang life, you know, the alcohol, the drugs, it just escalated, right? It started to grow. I needed more. I wanted more. You know, and it didn't really give me the same effect, but I always wanted that, you know. I always wanted that. I chased it, right? It's like a drug addict, right? Like they call it chasing the dragon, right? I chased it far and I chased it long, and you know, I went in, I would go in and out, and I remember this time, right, where I kind of started to question it, but then I dismissed it real quick, right? I'm walking through an alley with my brother. We're back in San Gabriel Valley, right? And probably like maybe 15 at this time, right? I got a 32 ounce of Budweiser, you know, in a brown paper bag. No shit in my pants, but I got a brown paper bag, and I'm walking through the alley, right, and thought about this many times over the years, right? The sheriff pulls up to us and says, "Hey, what's going on?" And I said, "What's going on with you?" Right? I said, "What are you fucking questioning me? I'm questioning you. What's going on? What are you doing here?" Right? I'm giving him the third, and he says, "What do you got in the bag?" I said, "I got a beer in the bag. What business is it of yours?" And he says, "How old are you?" I said, "I don't know, like 15 maybe." He says, "Nah, man, you're not supposed to have that." And this guy's trying to—he gets out of his fucking cruiser, and he's bigger than hell, man. And he's gonna take my beer. And I said, "Fuck no, you're not taking my beer." And me and my brother were like two little chihuahuas. I'm probably like 120 pounds, man. We literally start mauling this dude. We're on him, like we're on this dude, right? It escalates. I take his gun, right? I take his gun, and I have, you know, the right frame of mind, because I'm still, you know, still have a little bit of, so I throw his gun over into a parking lot, but we got on him, and then they got on me, right? His buddies came, and they beat the stuffing out of me, man, put me in the hospital, and I thought of over a 32-ounce beer, right? I could have just gave that beer up and went and got another one, but in my brain, I couldn't see this dude taking my beer. It just fucking, that was just insane, man. Go get your own. You know, but you know, that wasn't enough for me, right? I needed a little bit more, right? And I tell the guys that I work with today, right? If you haven't been punched in the mouth hard enough, then you're probably not ready to quit, right? But once you receive that ass whooping that says, okay, no mas, like I'm done, right? Then you're probably at that point. But that wasn't enough for me. I would eventually, I get sentenced to, I think, a year in this, the juvenile facility down there, and I do my time, and then I get transferred over to the county facility, which is Supermax, and I do the rest of my time there, right? And the whole time I'm just in this, you know, stupid phase with myself. I'm drinking Pruno in there, and I'm just, you know, life's good. Life's good, man. I'm in LA County Jail, right? I'm 18 years old, and it is great. I got alcohol. I got the fellas around me, and it's just good, right? I'm not really thinking about much else. I'm living for like the second or maybe a minute ahead, but nothing more than that. I would end up getting released from that, and then I get out on my birthday, July 10th, right? And man, I'm 19 years old now, and I'm on top of the world. I got fucking $2 to my name, right? Things are looking up for me. I'm walking, and I don't know my way around downtown LA, but I'm walking through Oliveira, and I'm thinking to myself, like, this is great, right? I bum a cigarette from a dude, and you know, convince this homeless dude to go in there and buy me a King Cobra. And it's good, right? It's good, man. And I told him I was gonna give him some, but I didn't, right? So I end up, you know, just getting back to where I was from, and you know, resume, right? Rewind, repeat. I get back there, and you know, same destructive behavior, man. Same destructive behavior. And I'm leaving out so much here because I don't think I have enough time to outline it all. But I was at this point at a place where I just didn't give a fuck, man. I just didn't care about nothing. I didn't care about myself. I didn't care about you. I didn't really, you know, care. I thought I cared about my family, but I wouldn't have been doing what I was doing if I did. And I had given up, you know, my higher power. I had given up everything that was a value in my life, right? I was at a state of bankruptcy, right? Morally, emotionally, mentally, like I had just checked out, man. I said, okay, this is cool, and this is what it is. I was prepared to die. I was okay with that. I was shooting at people, they were shooting at me, and it was, I was just okay. I had been shot twice, like, I'm okay with it. I'd been run over, stabbed. I had done some stabbing, it was a give and take to me, and that was cool. It was just like me creating balance, right? Chaos with a little bit more chaos. And it was around, I think, Halloween. I ended up getting into it with a group of guys, and you know, just a negative interaction where they beat me up pretty good, right? But I said, you know what? I got something for your ass. So I catch him probably like maybe a week or so later. I got, again, that same $2 to my name, and I'm thinking, I'm drunk as fuck it early, about 6 o'clock in the morning, and I'm like, I'm hungry. Got no food in the house, but there's this restaurant called Baker's, and they sell dollar meals. I got $2, so I'm gonna get two of them, right? And it's me, two of my buddies, and $2 between the three of us. We walk down there, but I got this nice nickel-plated Zig Sauer, right? 380, and it's just the sweetest. I love this. I love that. Love that. I had a holster for it. I thought I was like fucking like an agent or something, man. It was the coolest. But anyhow, we walked down there, and I don't know, like maybe 8:30 in the morning, man. I end up going in there. I see three guys, and I just unload the clip on them, right? I just unload the clip on these guys. You know, no concern about who was in that restaurant. No concern about the guys that I was with, my family, nobody, man. I just walk in there, and I just unload the clip on these three guys. You know, whatever. I run out of there, and I end up making it down to this this guy that had been killed. His I just run into his family's house. I break in, right, because I don't really give a shit. And I drink his dad's beer while I'm in there. What the kind of shitty-ass move was that, right? I break into his house, and then I drink his beer. And I'm watching the helicopter fly over, and I remember this because they mentioned this when I was going through trial, right? I'm sitting in his front yard, and I'm drunk, and I'm watching the bird fly over. And one of the guys says, hey, I think he killed those guys. I said, oh, man, fuck them. And I really felt it. It was like I was just numb. I didn't care. I said, fuck them. Like, I hope they die. Like, who gives a fuck? And we're like, what are you worried about? And I got mad at him. I turned my anger on him. And anyhow, but I would get, eventually they would end up getting me for that. And I would go into another county facility where I would await trial for the crime that I had committed. And, you know, when I got there, same behavior, right? I did it, you know, throughout the juvenile system. I did it. You know, my first county stand, and I did it this time, right? I just got in, and I just needed these people to show, I needed to show them that I was who I was trying to present myself to be, and not worried about trial, not worried about the crime that I committed, not worried about, the, you know, those three lives, not worried about anybody, just thinking about like what I needed, you know, in my sick thinking. And I needed people to see that I was who I thought I was, that I was okay, that I was good enough, that I was smart enough, and I wanted so badly to be accepted, right? So I get in there and I just start off in one module and eventually end up, you know, working my way through the county facility to where they lock me down in a and it's called a PIM module right there in the county where I'm from, but it's a problem inmate module where I had to live by myself in a cell. You know, I couldn't even be with anybody else. And I would wait there throughout my trial and watch my mom brokenhearted. And, you know, going to court one day and they would tell me that, you know, what my outcome was going to be. And I laughed about it, right? They said, you know what, Mr. Gonzalez, you are a menace and we think that you deserve to never be out, you know, come out here to hurt anybody again. And we're going to give you two life sentences with, like, I think it was like 67 or 97 or something, right? But I didn't care. I just thought, all right, fuck you, you know, like whatever, you know, like. And I laughed. I remember laughing about it, even though my family was crying in the, you know, in their seats. And I was just like, all right, man. It was like a fucking like a rap song to me in my head. I said, all right, cool, whatever. And you know, I was too stupid to be afraid, like too stupid to care, just really thick-headed, really ignorant. And you know, that's just the way that it was going for me, right? Like life had been in that. You know, just going in that flow of destruction, right? And I waited there to be sentenced, you know, sent to prison. Eventually, I would get there, man. And the county jail was kind of hard to get drunk, right? You had to really save up your apples and whatever you could and whatever Kool-Aid you could, and it was just bullshit. But when you get to prison, that's where you get the alcohol. It's good, right? It's all good. And I got there, and right away, I get sent to Tehachapi. That's the reception center where we go to. And I said, hey, where's the booze? Like, where's the booze at, right? Like, fuck the programs. I don't give a fuck about nothing else. Where's the alcohol, right? Because I'm really not feeling too good, but I'm not acknowledging it. So I save up enough. I get enough, and I start that same pattern, man. I'm drowning every thought, every feeling, every emotion that I ever had, man. I'm just drowning it as fast as I could, because I don't even want to think about this. And I'm just stuck in prison, and I know I got 1 billion years to do, and I'm never going to get out. And I think I'm maybe 20 years old at this time, and I'm pretty sure I'm probably going to die in this place. But you know what? Fuck it. And that was my answer, right? Like when ignorant people have no other answer, it's fuck it. You know, that's the way to go, right? Like, fuck it. Let's go get into that. Fuck it. You know, what do you think about that? Fuck it. You know, those people don't care for you. Ah, fuck it. Whatever, right? So that was it. That was the answer for me. And I said, fuck it, enough, that I started there, man. Anything that I can consume, I was ready. I was ready. And I did that, you know, throughout my time in Tehachapi and you know, just behaving same criminal, same gang member, same dysfunctional ass guy that I had been before I got there. I just, you know, kind of with my alcoholism, you know, and everything else, it just escalated, right? I got there and, you know, I immediately decided that I needed to, you know, show these guys who I was. And that would land me into solitary, you know, where I would, you know, through reception center. I didn't even make it out of reception center. I ended up in the ASU or the hole or whatever you want to call it. But spent a little bit of time there and get kicked out, and I end up in New Folsom, right? And New Folsom, man, New Folsom is that is a tough yard right there. That's a tough place to be. You know, I'm just a kid, right? I'm probably at this time like maybe 140 pounds, and back then you had, you know, these guys were fucking huge, right? They were huge, man. And I was just still that same little chihuahua, right? That needed to show you like how bad I was and how you know, how I'm not afraid of you and how I'm not worried about it. And same thing, man. I'm drinking as much as I could, but I found this, you know. I leveled up a little bit because I went from Pruno, then I started getting Lightning. Right? It's called White Lightning. So it's this purified alcohol, man, and it will rot your guts out for sure. So I started in on that, and you don't need to drink as much because, you know, just enough. A cup gets you smashed, man, if it's they cook it right. But don't ever try it. But I'm drinking as much as I can, and I'm still, you know, on that same thing, not thinking about changing my life. My family's still following me from prison to prison, you know, crying. And I remember this visit. My mom comes up, and my dad, right? And my dad's just quiet, we talk about the Lakers and maybe that's it. We had some real superficial conversations throughout our life, but I knew that he loved me and he knew that I loved him, and that was kind of, it was just a weird relationship. But my mom tells me something, right? She says, "Hey, Mio, I know this is a bad place." And I've had uncles, most of my uncles have been in prison. Most of my cousins, have my aunts been in prison. Too many people in my family have been a part of the justice system. And my mom says, my first package, right? She sends me my package, and she sends me some cartons of cigarettes, and it's good. That's like money in there, right? Cartons of cigarettes and some stamps, and it's all good. And she comes to see me. She's telling me about it. And then I remember the words, man. She says, "Look, I know this is a bad place in here, but you do what you got to do to survive." And fuck, man, that really, like, that just released me. I went out immediately after that, and I stabbed the shit out of somebody, man. I said, "You know what? Like, this is what I got to do to survive. I got to be more dangerous. I got to be more, callous than the rest of these guys." And I would meet some guy in the prison yard, and just he would be another victim along the way, right, of my dysfunction and my just distorted way of thinking, right, this pollution that I was putting myself through, right, and I would do the next 4 years in solitary as a result of this one, right, and then back there in the shoe, you would think that it's hard to get alcohol, but fuck, man, they were giving me these big packs of sugar and all the fruit I could have. And it was good, right? So I'm in Corcoran Shoe, and it's great, man. It's great. I got a guy from San Diego that just showed me how to do it. He's got all these little paper cups, and I got like a fucking little laboratory, in my prison cell, right? And it's good, and they're all done according to time, right? So this one will be done today. This one will be done tomorrow. I got fruit flies everywhere. It's disgusting. Right, but I'm good with it. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm drinking today. Well, you suckers ain't, but I'm drinking today. And I'm just locked in this, place, man. And I'm not really registering, the impact of my decisions and what I'm doing and how I'm hurting people and how I'm just digging this hole deeper and deeper and deeper, right? But I don't care, right? I got a solution, man. I got a solution. So the solution comes in the form of this cup and this sweet, sweet drink. And I'm going to pound it down until I can't remember shit. And I'm gonna soldier on, man. This is what I'm gonna do, and this is what I would tell myself. And they filed on me, right? I ended up in Sacramento, and I'm signing a deal. And I think the judge is telling me I'm going back and forth, right? And it's football season, and I'm missing the games because I got to go back to court, and I'm pissed about that, right? Like, how dare you, right? Same as that sheriff in that alley, man. How dare you? The fuck, you're gonna disrupt my program? You're tripping, man. Like, that's not gonna happen. And I'm pissed, and I get in there, and I say, "Look, man, fucking whatever deal you got, whatever you're going to do, but I'm not coming back anymore. That's it. Whatever you got, give me fucking 30 years, 20 years. I don't give a shit. I got however many years and two life sentences. I don't give a fuck, man. Just do what you're going to do and make it quick." So anyhow, he says, yeah, for sure. Here's your 6 years, and, get on your way and go watch your football game. And so I sign, laugh about that one, and end up back on a bus to Corcoran. And I sit there and finish my 4 years, and I get out, right? I get out of the shoe, and I end up right here in Central, I think it's Central Kern Valley, right? And I'm there, man. And that's when the booze really started to flow. I started evolving as a criminal in prison, right? And as a criminal in prison, some of the perks are that you get what you want in prison. So that's who I became, right? And I had people, fucking gallons of lightning, man. Gallons of this poison, right? And I got them lined up, and I don't need to have all these paper cups anymore. I don't need to worry about anything, right? In my mind, I'm the man. I made it, right? I'm on the top of the food chain. And I'm there. It's this shoe kickout yard, and life's good, man. I'm corrupting everybody that I could because I was, mentally, emotionally, like morally bankrupt, man. I don't give a fuck who you are. If you have kids, if you got a baby on the way, if you're supporting your family, like, look, if you're willing to work for me, I'm willing to corrupt your ass, and I'll do it. And I did it, just time and time again. And I mean, that was a place where, man, I was a lunatic, dude. I was a lunatic right there. I ended up getting kicked out of that prison. They kicked me out. Crip. They didn't want to keep me there. They said, "You know what? You're just, something's wrong with you, bro. You got to go." And they grabbed me, come, you know, early in the morning, man. It was like 7 a.m. I didn't have, much of a stay there. 7 a.m., they come grab me. They take me to the ASU, and then they bring a van, and they transport my ass out of there. They said, you got to go. And I said, well, this is special treatment. All right? They moved me to another prison, because they didn't send me to jail for anything. They didn't catch me with no drugs. They didn't catch me with any weapons. You know, I was just a danger to the institution is what they said. You know, I was a danger to the institution, and they booted me out of there, and they sent me down south, man. And down there, it's like, that's no man's land, right? I'm down there, and it's 101 in the morning, 7 a.m., man. It's hotter than hell. And it's like living on the sun, and now I'm miserable, and I'm angry, and I'm already, like, I've already gotten to the point to where I'm a little callous, man. I'm a little callous, and I don't want to say that I'm minimizing that. I'm callous, man. I had already closed off, and I had already fucking just come to a point to where I didn't like who I was. You know, I just didn't like who I was. I think this is maybe 2011. So I go through it, and the behavior just continues to escalate, and the things that I was doing, and I'm just drowning it. I'm just drowning it, man. I'm getting as high as I can. I'm getting as drunk as I can. You know, and I had no clue about AA. I had no clue about any other recovery programs. I just wanted more of what I had, right? Because I thought in my mind that if one more drink would fix what was wrong with me. Like, one more drink would make me forget everything that I had put my family through. One more drink would just make me forget, man, where I would be okay, and I would fucking pound as much as I could to, like, go to sleep at night. I had insomnia. I would be up for days until I passed out, and I was just fucking losing my mind. But still moving forward, right? Like, soldiering on. I ended up getting moved out of that prison and to a prison right next door to it. And I think this is where, like, you know, things started to shift, man. I'm at this point, I'm already, what, like 15, 16 years in the prison, right? 15, 16 years I had been in there. And, you know, I'm going on and just same shit, right? Like, I knew exactly what to do every place that I went in prison. There was nothing that I didn't know. Like, all the shitty stuff. I didn't know any of the good stuff. I just knew all the shitty stuff. I knew who to contact. I knew how to get what I wanted. I knew how to, you know, make it all work out for me, right? And I could stay drunk. I could stay high. I could stay, you know, with enough money to make it all go round. And again, I'm looking at my parents, right? My mom has always been there, man. She's coming, and I could just see her, like, her face just aging right in front of me, man. I'm looking at her. She's getting smaller. She's getting more fragile. And I remember the last time I seen my dad, he got arrested, and then I had some girl sneak him into the prison. I don't know how he got in. He just got out of the county, and she brought him in, right? And he looked like, I hadn't seen him in years, man. He looked like an old spotted cow. He had, like, white spots all over him, and he was just, like, he had these big old lips. And I said, what's up? And it's my pops, right? And he's drunk. I could smell the beer on his breath. And I'm like, this guy, he's a maniac. I give him a hug, give him a kiss, and I never seen him again after that. Right? He ended up dying March of 17. You know, cirrhosis is an ugly death, man. And I get to that point, right? A counselor calls me in, right, to the office. Anytime you get a death, like, there's a death in your family, like, the counselors will notify you and tell you, hey, this is what happened, you know, whatever, just being decent people, right? But I hated the cops. You know, most of my life I hated the cops. I didn't talk to the cops. I didn't have nothing to say to them, right? They weren't my friends. They were all enemies, right? It was us and it was them. And so when this counselor called me in, she says, hey, I got something I want to tell you, and, you know, I got something I need to tell you. And she outlines the fact that my dad just passed. And I said, with the hardest face I could, I said, all right, thank you. And she looks at me, and she's thinking, like, what the, like, maybe I didn't hear her. So she tells me again. She says, did you hear what I said? And I said, yeah, I did. Says, your dad just passed. I said, all right, thank you. And, you know, and at this point, I'm just fucking just, man, just closed off, and I had given up hope, and I had given up those feelings that I just didn't want to, that I believe made me weak, right? Love and hope and compassion and empathy and all these things, man. I said, you know what? I got no use for them. And she says, I'm trying to leave the office, and she says, hey, hold on a second. And I stop, and I'm just like, what's up? Because I don't talk to these people, man. She says, you don't gotta be so hard. She said, you don't gotta be so hard. And I said, all right, thank you. I thanked her, and I just dismissed her, man. I dismissed her, and I walked out of there. And I went back to my room, and I had a cellie or a roommate at this time, somebody that I was living with, and I just couldn't talk to him about it. You know, I really had nobody. I couldn't talk to anybody about it. And I walked out to the yard, and I remember this, man. This was crazy. I'm not really a big crier. I don't, being detached, or I don't know what it is, right? I probably got to talk to a therapist about that, but I'm not really a big crier. And I get out to the yard, and there's 1,000 people in this yard, right? Those down south prisons are fucking huge. And they're all sweaty and angry and hot, and it's just, ugh. And I get out there, and I'm standing on the yard, and I look around, man, and there's 1,000 fucking dudes in this yard, and it hits me in my head, right? Like, I don't have one person I can talk to. My dad just died, and I don't have one person on the planet, man, that I could talk to and say, hey, my heart's broken. I lost my pops. He was my buddy. He was my drinking buddy. He was my smoking buddy. He was my crime buddy, right? He was my dad. And I loved him, man. Through the dysfunction, through the addiction, through all of it, you know, he loved me. I loved him. We talked about the Lakers. It was good, and I couldn't tell anybody about that, like about how I lost that, and I'm never going to see him or have him or touch him or nothing again. And, man, I felt it. I was like, holy fuck, what is this? This is crazy. I knew the tears were going to come. And then there was fucking just no way, bro, on the planet that I was going to show anybody this. So I made to the gate, right? And I was like, oh, man. Like somebody that has to use the bathroom real bad. I was like that. And so I don't go out there. And again, man, like I don't function. I don't talk to the cops. I don't talk to the staff. I don't talk to anybody ever. Right? It's not something that I ever did. I thought that was taboo. And anybody who did that, they weren't shit, man. They were just like the lowest of the low. And so I see this door, right? And I'm like, I don't even know what's in this door. I'm just like, I don't care. I'm going through it. So I bust through that door, and it's the chapel. I'm like, what the fuck? And I can't say nothing. I can't even get any words out of my mouth, man. I don't go to church. I never been in any chapel in prison. I'm got 18 years in at this time. And I'm just like, man, it's going to come out. And the chaplain looks at me, and he says, and I don't remember his name. I can't picture his face in my mind, but I can hear his voice like somewhere in my head. He says, it's okay, man. Go in there. And he opens a door, and I go in there, and it just comes out like an ocean. I'm crying my ass off, man, crying like a baby, right? And I don't know how long I was in there for, maybe like 5 minutes, 5 hours, whatever it was, but I cried, man, and I was like exhausted when I was done, like, oh, shit. And I got up, and I walked out of there. I didn't thank him. I didn't say anything. I just walked out, and I left, and I went back to my room, and nobody knew, right, other than me and that chaplain. Get back in there, and, you know, I still keep going on, man. My dad just, you know, lost his life to this addiction, man. And then, but I continue on, right? And that same counselor that called me in there, she calls me in there. She says, hey, you know what? You know how they say, like, God, takes mercy on babies and fools? You know, I think I probably had one of those. You know, and she says, you're too stupid, man. You're just that kind of dumb for sure. And she gave it to me hard, and I knew that I needed it. And she says, I'm going to put you in on this this AA program, right, or as any program. It was one of the programs. I didn't take it serious. That's why I don't know what it was. But she says, you're going to run this program. I says, what? I'm selling all the drugs on the yard, right? I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, you're putting me in with all the customers. Like, what? This is bonkers, right? Like, hell yeah, I'll do this for sure. Yeah, and so for sure enough, I get in there and I'm serving everybody, right? I'm just like, it's good, right? Bring your green dots or bring your whatever you got, and it's all good. And I'm going through the motion, man, and I'm just like out of touch in my mind. And she's there. She comes in and she's sitting there, and she was just this big African-American lady, man, like beautiful, like in my brain, I don't know why she like, I think back on her, and she was like probably like a little angel for sure. She probably had wings under her vest, right? She was something, man. So she's looking at me, she's typing, and she knows I'm on the bullshit, right? She's just like, oh, this guy right here, And I'm trying to be slick. I'm just like, whatever, here you go. And I'm serving it out. And she's just like, man, you are just seriously dumb, right? I say, yeah. I say, yeah, I don't know what happened. Like, whatever. But a couple months later, she calls me back to the office, right? And the way that you go from a one-level prison to the next level prison is by, like, a point system, right? So I think at this time I had, like, maybe, like, 250 points, right? So to get to a level three, you have to have, like, I don't even remember, like, 60, maybe 40 or something like that, right? So I had given that up. I believed that I was going to spend the rest of my life on a four-yard, that I was going to die on a four-yard somewhere, like, in some filthy-ass spot, probably, like, getting shot by the tower in a riot or I don't know, whatever. But I didn't give a shit. I was just like, whatever. But you know what? It was different. You know, it was different, you know, at that point. And I knew that I wanted something. It was like knowing that there's something out there, just not knowing what it is. And she calls me in there, and she's like, man, you're some kind of dumb, huh? I said, yeah, for sure. And she says, you know what? I'm going to send you out of here. I'm going to send you to a level three. And I says, no way. Like, what are you talking about? I told her, look, I got like fucking, I don't know, I didn't even know how many points I had. She told me, she's like, yeah, you got this many, but some new law passed or something passed within CDC or CDCR that you can get this, what's called an override. And she's like, I'm going to send you out. Do you want to go? And I said, fuck, yeah, I'll go. Like, I'll go, right? Because I was looking at her because I knew if I told her no, she was going to be like, you are dumb. Get out of here, right? So I said, yeah, I'll go. But I didn't want to go. I didn't know, like, what I was supposed to do. I had like 10 phones coming and some other stuff and all this shit. And I'm like, man, I'm going to leave. This is a lot of money, right? And I got my booze connect here. I got all the cooks, right? I got it all sewed up, man. And I remember I made the choice in 2018, man. I said, all right. It was September of 18, man. I said, all right, I'll go. And they put me up for the override. I tell my little gang-related Sally, I said, hey, bro, like, it's all you. I left them with everything that I had, all the shipment I had coming. I got on the bus and I took my happy ass to CMC, which is right here. So I get there and I mean, most of my prison time was just concrete, right? You see concrete and wires and whatever. And this men's colony over here is just, it's a different beast, man. I got there and man, it was a trip, right? I saw a freaking tree. I was like, what the are you kidding me? And I said, bro, like, whatever you got to do, you got to touch this. Like, if they shoot me, just wing me, man. Wing me in the leg or something, but let me just rub the tree down a little bit. And so I didn't touch the tree, though, but I looked at it often. And I walk into my room, and I know that CMC, like, for my thinking at that time, it was not a place that I really, like, thought was okay to be, right? Like, CMC is, like, a really, like, you know, like, soft prison, right? Like, you know, to prison standards. And I wasn't a soft person, right? I was you know, I didn't think of myself. I thought, and I looked, and everybody looked kind of happy, like they were just floating around, right? And I was just like, what is this fucking weird, bro? Like, what's going on? The COs, they talk different. The free staff, they talked a little bit different. And I was just like, fuck you guys. What the fuck? This is bunch of weirdos. And I told myself, like, bro, I'm gonna fucking stab the hell out of somebody the moment I come out of this cell. Like, I'm gonna fucking just give somebody the business right now, right? And I had already, like, given up. I said, fuck it, it's over. And I'm on this, like, orientation, bro. And then they call me up and they said that I'm gonna move into another cell, right? And so I say, okay. So I grab my stuff and I go up there to the cell and it's this older black dude, right? He got a gold tooth. You know, trip on this, I'll tell you, I ran into this dude out here, right? Yeah, crazy. I had only seen him once, never seen him again, but that dude didn't understand, like, he had an impact, right? Like, he said, I asked him, I'm taking his cell, right? I'm taking his cell, he's going somewhere else, and I was like, where are you going? Do you need help? And I'm just, you know, just trying to be a convict about it. And he says, I'm going home, man. I said, oh, that's good, good, good. How long did you do? He said, I did life. I did a life sentence. I said, what? This, I had never seen anybody get out with a life sentence. I thought, no way, man. And I'm just this fucking boozed up, drug addict, criminal gang member. I said, what? How did you do it? You know? And he says, you know, I just worked my ass off, man, and gave into the program. And I didn't know what program he was talking about, but I said, all right, there's got to be a program out there, whatever. But I, you know, didn't really care. But anyhow, so I get into this dude's cell, and I clean up, and then I go down on the bunk, and then said on his bunk, it said, don't lose hope. And I don't know, it just hit me, man. I said, what the fuck? I decided I wasn't gonna do what I had convinced myself to do, and I moved forward, went out, man, and went out to this yard where all these guys were trying to better themselves, and I ran into some guy that I knew from you know, different people, different places, and he said, hey, man, there's a program over here. It's AA. I said, man, what the fuck is AA, bro? Like, what are you talking about? And he says, well, there's a program. They got it over here. You can go. I said, no, that's probably not for me, man. Like, you guys talking to the cops over there? What's happening? Like, what kind of shit, what kind of funny business is this? And he says, well, it's a program. It's about recovery. It's a program. And I heard the words, program, recovery, get out of prison, right? And he said, I said, no, you know what? I'm cool on that. He said, bro, they got coffee. I said, coffee? I said, yeah, I'll go fuck it, man. Like, they got coffee. Like, I'll just show up. So I show up for the coffee, and I'm just like, these fucking suckers. And that's where I actually met my sponsor, John. So, but, yeah, so I'm there, and I'm sipping the coffee, and I'm just fucking, like, criticizing everybody. I'm like, man, he's a bitch. That dude's a sucker. Those people up there, they got to be full of it, man. Like, definitely, everybody. You guys were all full of it, man. You guys were getting paid, bribed. It was court order. Something had to happen for you guys to show up, right? Like, in a prison, that was fucking crazy. Who would come to a prison like voluntary, right? Like, because they wanted to, because they were trying to help somebody. That sounded corny to me. But I sat there long enough, right? I sat there long enough to be able to hear what was happening, right? I started off way in the back, and man, I would listen to their words, and at first it sounded like wah 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 wah, and I said, oh man, this is just crazy. But they got coffee, right? And then I eventually moved a little closer, and I heard a word or two. I said, whoa, what is that? And then, you know, I sat through a little longer, and you reeled me in with coffee, but you got me with this with what the program really offers, right? A hope, you know, this compassion that I had given up, right? This empathy that I had decided wasn't for me, that made me weak, and these were actually my superpowers. I eventually became the secretary of that meeting, and I just dove in, man. I dove in, and I got to really see what the steps look like, right? Like, what the principles look like how it would change my life so drastically if I just decided to surrender, right? Surrender to win is what they used to say in there, right? That was like a catchphrase, surrender to win. It sounds kind of weird, right? Like, surrender to win. Like, what? Like, oxymoron, bro. Like, get out of here. But I did. I surrendered to win, and I gave in, and all the direction, right, for the people that had been doing it before me, I gave my all, and I wanted what they had. They looked happier than I was, less stressed. They probably slept better. Their beards looked better, right? And I wanted it, man. And I think at this point, I'm already well into my recovery, man. I'm working the program. I'm all about AA, right? And I get this letter saying, hey, bro, like if you're interested, you know you get an opportunity at a parole date. And I said, what the fuck, bro? I got like double life, and like I was like, what are you talking about, man? What are you talking about? Like, and I go to my counselor. And now I talk to the counselors, right? Because I need to know what's happening with my life. This is as a result of this hope that I ended up cultivating, right? Or I was able to cultivate with the help of all of you guys. And I said, what's up? What is this? And she says, this is hope. Do you want it? I said, right? And it was from that moment, man. I started applying like everything that I had learned in this program, man, towards every group and every class and I got my GED. I enrolled in college, right? I educated myself. I fucking worked like my ass was on fire. And after a few years of doing that, I ended up in front of a parole board, and they said, well, why should we consider letting you back out, man, after all this? And they went over everything that I had ever done, man, like how I had assaulted officers and inmates and people in the community, and like what gave me the right, right? What gave me the right to think that I should be able to get out? And I said, you know what, I've forfeited that, right? But what I can do is I can talk to you about who I am today. And every word bro, every word. And I'm not hyping this up to make it sound good in the convention, because I don't got no pitch. I'm not a circuit speaker. I just give it to you from the heart. Like, every word that came out of my mouth was the program. Every word. And when I was all done, they said, man, like, how did you get to this point? And I talked to them about the Big Four Fellowship. I talked to them about how AA had done this. I talked about all these miracles, right, that I was able to recognize with a clear mind when I was sober and, you know, and I was working a program that kept me stable, right, that quieted this crazy mind that I have, right, and I didn't need to booze it up or get drunk or get violent, but I was able to talk to them and tell them exactly all the miracles, right, how that little angel with a vest on said, you know what, you're stupid and you need help, and, you know, how my sponsor, you know, guides me through, you know, these steps and guides me through this program, and when I'm unsure, how I reach out to a, you know, something greater than me, right, and how I know that all the things that I thought, right, were, maybe they were a result of my trauma and my past and all these, you know, painful circumstances, but it's not who I have to be today. Like, today I can be better. Today I can be of service, right? Today I can be a loving brother and son. And I mean, and this is who I am today. I can be just another person out here in the community that is willing to do their part, right? And I think that's AA, right? I hear that, and I hear AA. So I would end up being granted parole right after all that. They said, yeah, you know what? Something about you, man. You ain't so stupid anymore. I said, nah, I'm not. And they said, you know, you can go home. And I said, what? So I ran back and I called my mama and I said, Mama, I'm coming home. And she says, yeah, man. Excuse me. So I get released and I go back to my mom. And man, I got out October 23rd of 2023, man, and I was able to love her hard, right? Yep. I was able to love her hard, you know, and the whole time she waited, she said, you know what, I'm going to wait for you to get out, man. Like, I'm not going to leave until you get out. And I ended up going to a transition home, and I worked through it, man. Worked two jobs and busted my ass, and I got us an apartment right here in Ventura, right there on the harbor. And I said, you know what, Mama, like, it's yours. And she's going through her medical struggles and dialysis, and I was able to move her in with me and show her, like, I'm not that same kid. I'm not that same man. I'm your baby boy, right? That's me, but just all grown up, you know, the man. And I was supposed to actually bring her. She was my original guest, and but she passed on Friday. But I knew, like, in my heart, that the man that I was presenting myself to be to her, right, like, somebody that sees his obligations through, somebody that does what he says he's gonna do. Right, this is the man that I've shown her that I am, and so I'm here today, right, to tell all of you that I appreciate you, right, everything that you do for AA. There's somebody in one of those institutions that needs you, like, absolutely, man, because without it, there's no way that I would be here. There's no way that I would have been able to spend that time with my mom before she passed, and there's no way that I would be standing here in front of you. So thank you.